This episode of Behind the Video is brought to you by the Independent Media Network. The Independent Media Network helps journalists and content creators create their own jobs by building sustainable online businesses. If you're an unemployed or underemployed journalist or content creator, visit imnct.com for more information. Hey, everybody. It is Lon Seidman with Tim Streets for Behind the Video.
Hey, guys.
You're in D.C., our nation's capital.
I am, and it's noisy here because I'm at a convention center.
And what convention?
The cable show.
The cable show. And I'm guessing cable shows are at cable shows?
That's right. It's where cable TV is bought and sold.
Ooh, interesting. So what? Now, has it started yet, or this is the first day tomorrow?
Tomorrow's the first day. Today's setup day, so you'll probably see forklifts going behind me and hear all the lovely noise.
So tell us about what you think is going to be at the show. Anything of interest?
Well, there will be 4K Ultra HD is going to be here. There's also some folks are going to be exhibiting the DLNA HTML5 RUI. I have no idea what that is. It's reading a sign.
That sounds very technical, whatever it is.
Yes, so. Yes. But basically, I'm going to be exhibiting in the cable net, cable futures area. So it's an area of the show where all the new technology that is available or soon to be available for cable television is being demonstrated, and M-Dialog is going to be demoing some of the one-to-one addressable dynamic ad insertion across connected devices here at the show. So that's what I'll be showing off to all the CEOs and CTOs tomorrow morning at 7:30 in the morning, East Coast time.
You're still on West Coast time, I'm assuming, too.
Yeah, baby.
All right. Well, welcome to our East Coast time. As you can see, I'm quite casual. I've been walking the dog this morning. So we have now the show is going to be of interest to cable people. But for the rest of the world, all eyes will be on San Francisco because WWDC begins tomorrow. And that is Apple's big developer conference where we will undoubtedly see what Apple will be introducing next. And we haven't seen anything too exciting out of Apple lately, so let's see if there's anything that will impact creators. And there hasn't been a lot of rumors on TV stuff, but it's mostly been iOS related and new designs for operating systems.
Do you think there's a coincidence that it's taking place at the same time as the cable show?
I don't know. Could be. Yeah, that's a very good point.
You remember when they used to do a keynote same time as CES.
Right, and I it was funny. I remember when they introduced the iPhone because CNBC was covering CES and doing everything else, and they immediately, once Steve Jobs got into his thing and it was actually a phone coming out, they cut their they actually cut into it live, like a breaking news event, and we're broadcasting his big keynote of introducing the phone. So I think they'll either blow the world away tomorrow or be more junk. Who knows? We'll see what happens. But there's rumors on the music side, and I'm sure that they've been talking to cable
people.
Apple Maps.
It's really great this time.
It's going to be awesome. So we'll see where that goes. So we do have a bit of breaking news related to independent content, and that is Jason Calacanis, in his usual fashion, said he is leaving YouTube because, and in his words, he ain't working on YouTube's farm no more. Calacanis, in an email, which goes out to his list of many people, said that he doesn't like in his words, the absurd 45% YouTube tax, a lack of marketing support, no direct sales force at YouTube, and in his estimation, 20 to 30 cents on the production dollar in support. And he also says trust. And along with that, the rap reports that Maker Studios is now considering starting their own video streaming network with Calacanis as an investor. So I know, Tim, you've had some discussions with him or people around him.
Yeah, I had a breakfast with him and about 30 other people on Thursday. And, he talked about this and said that, it doesn't make sense when you take a look at what you're doing there on YouTube. And, of course, the headline doesn't say the fact that he still believes in YouTube from a marketing standpoint and that you have to be there to, be visible. but you need to be in control of your audience. And for him, a win-win situation kind of looks like you would have you would be able to have the email address of the person who subscribed to your show, because in his opinion, they're subscribing to your show. They're not subscribing to YouTube. They subscribe to YouTube when they type in YouTube.com. That's their subscription. When they fill out an account, they've subscribed to YouTube, and YouTube now has them as a customer. But when they subscribe to your show, he feels that you, as the show producer, should be able to contact them directly and email to them and market to them and own that customer. YouTube doesn't have it set up that way as far as terms of service. There is a win-win situation that he has in mind. It'll be interesting to see if YouTube cares enough to listen to him, but he's definitely on YouTube's radar now, and folks are talking about this all week long. It has been the buzz of the web series world this week. You do look at all the things that YouTube provides. They provide free bandwidth, and he goes into this in his email, which you can check out just by Googling Jason Calacanis YouTube. Not working on the farm. That'll get it.
That's
get
right.
It for you. he is bitter as well, because he had basically built a content farm called Mahalo. And he was doing pretty well with that until the Panda update for SEO, and that just killed him. And so the business model that he had set up with Mahalo is kind of no more, although he said he still is making, I believe he said he's still making seven figures, but it's not the money that he was making, which is really interesting. So.
And Mahalo, was started as kind of like an answers.com kind of thing, with maybe a little bit higher quality content, where he was paying people to answer questions that were, that he was seeing piping up through search queries and that kind of thing. And it certainly changed that business completely. And he had to lay off a lot of people. And I could see why he's pretty upset over that. And I think what happens too is for a guy like me who's making $150 a month on YouTube, I can't make that kind of money anywhere else. But I think when you get to the Ray William Johnson level of production, you probably hit a wall where you really can't grow the revenue any more than you already are at. So this seems that they might be able to grab those fans and transition them off YouTube to somewhere else. So we'll see where this develops. Is it expensive to do this, Tim, to start your own streaming?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, if you're going to talk about bandwidth, the price of bandwidth is coming down, but you've got to build out a whole infrastructure, and you've got to be able to serve your own advertising. You've got to have your own ad sales team. That's not cheap. And a cautionary tale, what some people do is they will, since they don't have an ad sales team, they will use an ad network, and they'll plug that ad network in. And that's great. They'll start seeing revenues right away, but they become addicted to it. And they can't get off of it because they're making all that money. And once they hire an ad sales team, the ad sales team can't compete against the ad network with the direct sales. Because, let's say you're in an ad network, you're getting a $5 to $8 CPM, and then you hire an ad sales team that can sell a $30 to $40 CPM directly. Well, nobody's going to pay the $30 to $40 CPM when they can get to your channel and know how to find it through an ad network for a $5 to $8 CPM. So the only way that I see doing that would be to undercut the network and start with a $4 CPM and then eventually raise your prices and not be available on the ad network anymore. But it's not an easy solution, because the ad network provides a great value. It's a great service. It's plug and play. You make some money and everything's great, except when you try to go do those direct sales. So there's a little bit of a hurdle there.
It does get challenging there. And two, from the advertiser perspective, having an ad network to work with is a lot easier than trying to hear pitches from a million different publications. The network we run here in Connecticut, we have been growing our revenue very slowly, but still very steadily, because a lot of regional advertisers would prefer to talk to one entity as opposed to, you know, 85 different individual websites who all have different structures and pricing and everything else. So, hey, we'll see what see how it comes of it. It's going to be a tough road for them. And there's, you know, of course, there's other alternatives too, like Blip and others. And Yahoo might do something too at some point. So we'll see how Jason's new plan develops. But let's move on to the video charts of the week. So our broadcast shows, this is all, by the way, from tvbythenumbers.zap2it.com. So broadcast, number five for last week was a 60 minutes rerun. In fact, our 5, 4, and 3s are all reruns. NCIS at number 4, Big Bang Theory number 3, and The Voice, which is the only new show on the top five this week, dominated at the 1 and 2 spots, but still pretty low viewership here, Tim. These are the numbers, 10.9 million viewers for The Voice on May 27th. So not big network numbers. NBA on tap on cable, dominating the first three positions, around 8 million viewers on TNT for those playoff games. Your favorite show, Tim, number 4, Game of Thrones on HBO.
I got caught up too, man. I am all caught up, and oh my God, last Sunday's was, woof, what an episode.
I've heard a lot about it. And I've been putting blinders on because it's on my list of things to watch on my HBO to go. So, but I heard it was quite the ending there. So, good stuff. NBA playoffs, also number 5 on ESPN. So that's what's going on there. We were doing syndicated shows, Tim, but the syndicated list this week was exactly the same as last week. So habits don't change weeknights on the syndication. So we'll leave that one where it is. So GigaOm had an interesting story that I think we both found this week, which is that most iPad TV viewing happens at home. So it's a mobile device, but it's not being watched mobily. It's being watched in the same space that people watch television in. And it's intriguing that 82% of TV viewing, according to the study of from Audience Measurement 8.0 Conference, 82% of TV viewing is happening on tablets in the home. So these are almost becoming little televisions.
It's a personal TV. That's what I watch all my TV on, except for stuff that I've DVR'd.
And I'm in the same boat, and pretty much using the iPad almost exclusively now to watch the shows that I watch. And I'm not missing, like, the 60-inch TV. I don't know why.
Well, the thing is if you have it on your chest, it's bigger than a 60-inch TV. In fact, if it's on your chest and you're watching it, you can't see your 60-inch TV because the iPad is blocking it.
Mm-hmm. So it's all a matter of perspective.
Bigger.
And higher resolution, too, right?
Yeah, for sure, especially with the Retina displays.
So I got this iPad case called the iPivo Pad Pillow. It's $12. Get it. It's great. It is perfect for that. So it's good stuff. Walking Dead producers, this is according to Hollywood Reporter, recall early roadblocks at NBC. And I guess they initially tried to sell the now, does NBC own AMC, or are they separate entities here?
AMC has investment by I want to say it used to be Rainbow Media. Now it's something else. I can't remember who all's investing in it these days.
Interesting. So it's in any event, there's a great article in the Hollywood Reporter kind of detailing some of the hurdles that they went over to get to that point. So definitely check that out. The box office this weekend, this is courtesy of Nikki Fink at Deadline Hollywood. Not that she gives it to us personally, but we look it up over there.
You know, there's a lot of problems going on with Nikki and Sharon Waxman. Sharon Waxman over at The Wrap said that Nikki had been fired.
And oh,
then,
really?
The folks with Deadline say, no, she hasn't been fired. And so I don't know who to believe, but a big war is going on.
So some stuff going on in the media world, but well, maybe she didn't write this article then this weekend. But the tropical storm, according to Deadline Hollywood, has driven a lot of people to the movie theater. So we had it up here; it was all rain and not a lot of wind, and all that rain meant people were staying indoors for the weekend. So, or at least the early part of the weekend. So The Purge, which is a new horror film, topped the charts at $28 million so far this weekend. The Internship at $16 million. Fast and the Furious was tied. Also, Fast and the Furious really holding on to the box office there. So that's been doing pretty well also at $16 million. Now You See Me, $15 million. And After Earth, number 5 at $13 million. Worldwide, by the way, Fast and the Furious 6 is dominating the charts. This is as of last weekend, almost half a billion dollars already. Isn't that incredible? Iron Man 3 crossed the $1 billion mark, $1.1 billion in ticket sales. Pretty incredible when you look across all the international territories and how much the international market has become. It's probably dollar-wise even more important than the domestic one. So pretty fascinating stuff there. Tim, you've been following this Veronica Mars thing, right? With the Kickstarter?
Yeah, a little bit. Looks like some new people are joining the movie, right?
Yeah, it looks like Chris Lowell and Percy Daggs III will join the Veronica Mars movie. I guess these are all people that were on the show at some point in time. So it is moving forward, and there's going to be a 2014 premiere of the movie, and it looks like they're going to start shooting this summer. So it was a Kickstarter that became a feature film. So pretty cool. You found this one, Tim, some California tax credits. I guess this is the best way to find out what's going to be produced, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it'll be produced. Who knows if they come out? But some tax credits are finally in the work for California. I mean, there's been a lot of runaway production to Canada for years, and now to see tax credits being offered in California, that's kind of a big deal.
So now tell me about this. This is, I guess there's been a lot of competition. I know here in Connecticut, we offer very, very generous tax credits for film production. So are more productions moving out of California because of competing tax credit offers?
I'd say for the last 20 years, there's, you know, it's been runaway production with California. You know, Florida was competing, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, even Michigan. I know that, like, around the recession time, 2008, 2009, somewhere in there, a lot of stuff was being shot in Detroit. Hmm. They were pretty aggressive. But Canada, you know, you look at shows like The X-Files, you know, years ago, that was done in Vancouver. And, you know, it's just been a tradition that there have been all this runaway stuff going on. And so now maybe some of it will stay in California.
And I guess it looks like, according to the wrap, a new Entourage movie is on the way, The Purge 2. So The Purge is already doing well. They're making a second one. FX is Justified, King and Maxwell, and it looks like there was about 31 projects overall picked by lottery to get $100 million in tax credits from the California Film Commission. So if you didn't get in, you didn't get in. And I guess it doesn't extend to web production, so maybe it does if they're big enough, but... So YouTube charts. Now the YouTube charts now, Tim, are completely broken. So we talked about last week was looking at TubeFilter, and they've got a really neat top 50 of all of the YouTube channels and how they're doing. And what I did is I picked the top five. So let's run through these, and it's fascinating, honestly, completely fascinating as to who's making the top five for video plays on YouTube this past week. Number five, and this continues this mind-boggling thing of people watching other people play video games, the channel Sky Does Minecraft, 30 million views last week. He uploads a video.
That's more than TV shows.
Yeah, I mean, and it's just a bunch of people goofing around playing Minecraft. It is mind-boggling. The Ellen Show, not as much of a surprise, but The Ellen Show has 34 million views. You know, they're putting up clips of the show, so that's doing pretty well for them. Psy, our friend from Korea, 44 million views last week. That's, you know, that's pretty impressive that he can get that kind of staying power from
I think a lot of people play it just to listen to the song.
Oh, interesting. So they want to go
buying the song, just play it on YouTube.
Right, so they can tune it up there, and kind of like that Rebecca Black song Friday, right? Just when you thought you forgot about it.
Yeah, we're not allowed to talk about that.
Here's another one. This is when you realize you're getting old and don't understand the youth of these days. So PewDiePie, 46 million views. I can't even understand what he is saying or doing. It's just like wacky comedy something or other. It just has no appeal to me. But
you're an old man.
Yep. I'm just, you know, in my day, we've turned on our VHS and we liked it. 46 million views for this guy. Check him out. Pew, Die Pie. I have no idea what the heck's going on. Now, here's the mind-boggling one for me. And this shows you the international scope of YouTube. The top channel of the week was a Turkish music channel called Muyap. And I thought maybe because of all the protests going on in Turkey that might be you know, maybe there was some video they uploaded or something of what was going on there. No, it's just Turkish music, and it's just a lot of views that they're getting across their channel. 47.3 million views this week on the Turkish music channel.
Well, you know, when your TV station is shut down, you got to go to the YouTube.
So. That's true. That could be why they're doing it. The channel is MUYAP, and pretty neat stuff, so check that out. So that's a neat thing. I think we'll look at this again next week and see if the channel's change as much as the other ones, you know, this just the individual plays have done. So we'll take a look at that next week. Google reporting that they have tripled mobile sales amid wireless shift. And this is according to Bloomberg News. And they're saying that a quarter of the 1 billion users on YouTube are now accessing the device, the service via handheld devices. I'm one of those.
Well, maybe they better get those ads working and the clickable annotations working on these devices soon.
Please do, because I did a review of the Ouya, which is this new game console that just came out, and I had misspoke in the thing, and I had said that it was using one processor when it was using the other one, and I corrected it in a caption below, but I'm still getting all these geeks writing in, "You're wrong, it's a Tegra, not a Snapdragon." I'm like, okay, well, read the damn thing. And so, yeah, they need to get that working. And I actually, the reason why they're tripling mobile sales is because up until about 2 or 3 months ago, you couldn't even watch a mobile ad on a mobile device from YouTube. So it's no wonder that they've increased that volume so quickly. So, but again, I'm watching most of my YouTube at home. I don't know about you, Tim, but.
Well, yeah. And Zynga, you know, has had to lay off a lot of people this week because everybody's going to mobile, whereas right. Zynga was really set up to be a desktop game platform, and they're losing all their viewers to mobile devices, and they weren't prepared for it. So a big hiccup in the road for them.
And there was a great AMA, which is an Ask Me Anything on Reddit from one of those laid-off employees who had some good inside scoop as to what was going on there, and it's exactly it, that they had just had not, you know, not planned for this huge shift over to mobile apps as quickly as it's occurred. So lots of changes, and it looks like, you know, at least if you have an audience the size that YouTube has, you can start to transition people over. And they were leaving a lot of money on the table, and actually a lot of money for the creators too. You know, you used to be able to, on a YouTube video, I think you can still do this, is specify whether or not you want the video to play on non-monetizable platforms. I've always left that off just because I feel like the traffic is the traffic. But a lot of money was left on the table, so it's good to see those ads running on there. And I always let them play for people that I enjoy, and hope you will too. So we've got a bunch of new things of the week here, Tim. So we're going to start trying to make the news section shorter and extend out our picks of the week a little bit longer here. And we're going to start with a new one called Web Series of the Week. So, I don't know if we picked one or not.
Yeah, I don't think we've picked one, but it would be great if there's a web series that you guys want us to talk about that you've noticed. I mean, we have talked about the Lizzie Bennet Diaries. Right now they're doing a bridge series called Welcome to Sanditon, which is based upon the Jane Austen unfinished novel. And so they've gone ahead and started this story online, and they're going to let the audience finish the story, or at least it feels that way. So it'll be interesting to see how this one plays out, and then it leads up to the next new series that Bernie Sue and the folks at Pemberley Digital, which started out as a fictional company, and now it's a real company. Everybody that works there gets their checks now from Pemberley Digital, so it's all kind of freaky weird to them. And Welcome to Sanditon is this small California seacoast town, and you can actually participate if you want. There is a platform called Theatrix where you can sign up, and if you want to be part of the community of Sanditon, you can just fill out your profile and say what you do there in the town, and you can just play along with them. And so anything you want to upload there, you can go ahead and do it. So it's a whole new way of doing a show, and they're bringing in user-generated content, which to me seems like a whole heck of a lot of work, but they're having fun doing it, and you should check it out.
What a great way to connect with, because he has a huge audience of people that are really digging this. And what's, I think, unique about what Bernie's doing, too, is that it has a lot of women in the audience, which is not something a lot of YouTube channels have. So That's neat to be able to bring that in. So tell me more about Theatrix, Tim. What is that platform?
Well, we're actually going to have someone from Theatrix on the show. I'm working on getting them on as a guest, so I'd rather hold off until they can make it on the show and have them talk all about it. And we'll have a little bit more info about how successful it's been with Welcome to Sanditon as well.
Cool. Well, I look forward to that, because that's a really great way to start building on your audience and engaging them in a way. Because it's often hard to engage with video like you would with text or YouTube or something like that. So, well, Welcome to Sanditon is a, you can go on welcome to sanditon.com and check it out and be a part of that. And we'll look forward to seeing what Bernie does next. He is making some hits, definitely, for sure. So so let's move on to the app of the week. Tim, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And it's been around since November. It was built in a day. And when you see this, it's going to blow your mind. It is called the Infinite Jukebox. Have you heard of this?
I have not.
Okay, so Infinite Jukebox, I believe it's Infinite Jukebox. That is not the, you go and Google it. It's not infinitejukebox.com. But what it does is you upload an MP3 file, and it will make it play forever. It just loops it. It finds the loop points that it can basically attach to some other part of the song, and it will play absolutely forever. And if you go on the site, the top one is Call Me Maybe from Carly Lee Jepsen or whatever her name is, and it'll just play that song over and over again, but it doesn't ever end. It just finds a way to continually loop it, and it loops it differently based on some random features that it has, so you're never hearing quite the same playback as you would always do. And what's great about this is that, I don't know if you've ever run into this problem, but you have some of that buyout music library stuff where you maybe have a 30-second song and you need like 35 seconds and you got to go in and try to blend it together. Well, you could just run it through this thing and re-record it, and you've got a great loop that
I was waiting for why I would want this app part of your story, and there it is. I was like, okay, why would I want to listen to that song over and there we go.
There you go. There, and I was hearing about this, and I was like, wow, you know, because I'm, you know, if you're on a low budget, you're probably buying some cheap production music just to get yourself through. And I'm thinking, gosh, this would be so great, because I have spent so much time trying to blend, and I'm not a DJ, you know, I just don't have a knack for this kind of stuff. So the Infinite Jukebox, check it out. It will save your life and save some time, and maybe make you a little bit more money, because you can spend less hours on mixing music. So pretty cool. So topic of the week, Tim, making your own app versus having one made for you. And there's a lot of people that will make you an app, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you could hire a developer to make your app, and that, you know, could cost you $20,000, $50,000, $100,000, you know, depending on what you need that app to do. But most video people just want to show their videos. They want to have their Twitter, their Facebook, a way to email them, you know, maybe some other interaction as well, but basically it's mostly about the content. So there are services out there. One of the most popular ones is called Mobile Roadie. And you can go to their website, check it out. They've done a lot of stuff for the music industry, where they'll have music videos for some recognizable celebrities. And you pay a monthly fee, and the more you pay, the more features you get. But there's different things. Mobile Roadie, to me, is probably the most elegant solution out there that is pretty quick and turnkey. I like the idea of it a lot. I'm not a big fan of the pricing structure and how it works. But you can find competitors that are out there, and it's definitely buyer beware. You know, take a look, kick the tires. A lot of them let you try it for free, so you can kind of see, are you going to be able to build this thing yourself, or are you going to need somebody to do it for you? But definitely worth checking out. And one of the things that I was talking with someone who's really an SEO expert, has a business built on SEO this week, and he said with his video stuff, what he has found a big source of video views for his content that is SEO optimized is in his apps. And so people go to the app store, they go there, they look for specific types of apps. And if you have something that's highly targeted that people would be searching for on an app store, now, if you're doing a drama and you target it as drama, people aren't going to be searching for drama. So, but if you have something that maybe is relevant to, you know, you're doing a series about back pain, There, people may be searching for back pain and very looking true. For apps and different things like that. So really think about that SEO targeting, and does it make sense? And then is there an option out there that you can use yourself? It takes a little bit of research. You know, everybody's different, so I'm not going to recommend one. I'm not necessarily recommending Mobile Roadie because it's a little bit pricey, but I think they do a really elegant job of letting you load in all your digital assets into their framework, and they put out a great product. It's just, it for me, it's like, you know, to have the full-blown version is close to $700 a month, and that's just a little bit pricey for me. But, you know, if you're a big music brand, that's not a lot of money. But there are alternatives out there, and they come and go. They may be here today. They may be gone tomorrow. So you do have to be willing to know that at some point your app may stop working with an upgrade in the future. But you could probably, you know, build your own app and ride at least one wave. If you have something that is a little more game-oriented, there is a great app maker called Game Salad, so you might want to check them out. They don't handle video very well except for the gaming portion of it, and a lot of us have been after them for years to add video. It's on their list of stuff, but it's not a high priority because casual gamers don't care about cutscenes. You might be familiar with if you're a console gamer. That's where there's a video that plays that kind of bridges different levels of the game. And if you could do those and use their technology to build the app, you could build a really nice app for your video series and make it more interactive at Game Salad. But something worth checking out, seeing if, you know, if for some reason maybe some of the characters in your web series are going to build an app themselves, and you could use Game Salad to build the game that your characters build. So it just depends on how it fits your story and what you're looking up. But you should definitely take a look. If you're somebody that can put together a PowerPoint presentation or a keynote presentation, and you can handle that level of doing something, you might want to take a look at building your own app, because there are getting drag and drop or close to drag and drop alternatives out there for building your own app.
And I think that's coming too, because it seems like the need to have an app, because it is a channel, and this is one of the easiest ways you can go and get people to find you, is to say, hey, go to the App Store and download our channel, and you're off and running, and now you've got a place on their home screen. And if you're on both Apple and Google Play, you have the ability to push messages to people that have downloaded your app and continue those one-to-one interactions, which are really critical. There is a great little thing on codeschool.com. They kind of have a really nice way to ease you into programming. And if you're looking to maybe try to figure it out a little bit, you know, building a thing that gets drawn from an RSS feed to put videos up and playable on an iPhone screen or something it's not easy. It's certainly not easy, but it's not the most difficult thing you'll do on an iPhone. So, you know, you're not inventing Foursquare again. You're just, you know, having some buttons to click and play videos. It might be worth just checking it out. If you have some coding aptitude, give it a go and see if you might be able to figure it out, because having an app is really critical. And I think, as you know, as Jason Calacanis explained at the beginning of the show when we were talking about his issues, that, you know, developing those direct relationships with your viewers is really pretty important. So definitely check that out. Well, Tim, that'll do it for this week. Enjoy D.C. and our nation's capital, and I'm sure the NSA has been monitoring our entire conversation.
Yes, I will be having my one-man march from the convention center back to my hotel now that we finished this and tested out our bandwidth at the MDialog stand.
So this is great. We got a twofer here, Tim. You got the show done and made sure there was adequate bandwidth to show off what MDialog has to offer. So where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at 1 Tim Street.
And you can find me at Lon Seidman. And don't forget to go to our Google Plus community at behindthevideo.com. Sign up there, and you can stay in touch with us and let us know what web series you'd like us to profile next. And we could definitely get some traffic going for you. This is Lon Seidman at behindthevideo.com, and we are a wrap. Stories for this episode were compiled by producer Jason Perrier. Follow him on Twitter at JASONPERRIER. PERRIER. Behind the Video is a production of 8th Digital Incorporated and the Independent Media Network, LLC. All rights reserved.